together to fight for what we love.
Holds a significant amount of privilege and power over other groups.
You're listening to
Consider the Alternative.
Consider the Alternative.
Consider the Alternative.
Consider the Alternative.
A CITR podcast.
Hello, is this Stephanie Allen? Hi, this is Armand from CITR Radio. Yeah, so can you just hold on a sec while I just get set up for the interview? Thanks. So yeah, thanks for taking the time to speak with us today. As you know, I'd like to talk a bit about the Vancouver School Board's recent decision to remove the name Cecil Rhodes from the Colby Lane. Do you mind starting out by telling our listeners who you are and what you do?
Sure. My name is Stephanie Allen, and I'm a founding director of the Hogan's Alley Society. The Hogan's Alley Society is a not-for-profit organization that is founded to advance the social, cultural, economic well-being of people of African descent here in Vancouver.
Awesome. So let's jump into the recent debate over the removal of the name Cecil Rhodes from the Vancouver School. You tweeted, and I quote, that systemic anti-black racism persists in government institutions in 2019 in Canada. Could you expand on that and how that manifested itself in the lead up to Monday's vote on trustee Jennifer Reddy's motion to remove Cecil Rhodes symbols from the school?
It's a bit of an answer, right? So systemic anti-black racism exists in Canada because Canada was a slave-owning nation for 200 years. So while we were a British colony and into the early 1800s, Canada enslaved and held captive people of African descent. That was based and predicated on the social structuring of black people being less than humans and being our lives being worthy of subjugation on these lands, of course, that were stolen from indigenous peoples. And even after slavery ended in the territory known as Canada, black people went from a condition of enslavement into one of criminality. We were not welcomed in spaces. Our physical presence was objected to. It was all a function of a system that was predicated on our being less. And over time, Canada has not reckoned with this past, has not reckoned with the social ordering of our country in favor of white Europeans, particularly men. And so through time, even with various different governments and even with the enlightenment that you could say socially, where we're starting to realize that these notions are incorrect and are unjust, we still bear the weight of a country founded on principles that subjugated black lives. There's great resources out there to learn more about that. So when I said that and when I tweeted that, it was a reflection of how we still order society by race, by gender, by class, by immigration status. This is just how our societies are ordered. And it's really unfortunate that government institutions such as school boards have not done the work necessary to, number one, even know the history of black subjugation on these lands and globally, teach the history fully and completely in the classroom, and be aware of how these colonial references are damaging to the well-being of students of color, and particularly black students in the instance of the monument that was at this school.
I see. So I want to follow up a bit on one of the points you raised, the lack of historical knowledge of Cecil Rhodes and colonialism in general in Vancouver. played an important role in the board's initial response. One of the arguments that was made by Trustee Alan Wong, and to a less extent, Trustee Lois Chan-Pedley, was that by removing the plaque, we are attempting to erase history, and that could prevent us from learning about our past. What are some ways the school system can do better at educating students about the history of colonialism without glorifying it?
Thank you. I mean, I think what you said is accurate, right? There's a stark difference between teaching history. It's quite another thing to erect a monument with someone's name on it without context, without any explanation. Putting my name on a building in Vancouver is a celebration of me. Let's not confuse what we're doing. If you see the Stephanie Allen building at the corner of 12th and Kingsway, you're going to think Stephanie Allen's an important person. We need to know who that is. What did she do that bestowed upon her this honor? And so when Trustee Wong and others made that argument, it is a common argument made by supporters or people who are wanting to uphold the existing systemic problems around white supremacy and black exclusion. They make those arguments as a way to smokescreen. Now, there's an important working definition of racism in Canada that was coined by scholars a little while ago, and it's important to distinguish the Canadian version of anti-black racism versus the American, where there was legislation that was quite glaring, segregation, Jim Crow. Canadian anti-black racism, by and large, had a few legislative attempts but failed. For example, in 1911, the Wilfrid Laurier cabinet passed an order in council to ban the immigration of black people to Canada. It was overturned, but those kinds of behaviors remained in place in the immigration policies of Canada up until the 50s. Where black people were not welcome or dissuaded from coming to Canada. So it's an example of how the systems, these things that are baked in, are masked by not having the overt legislation or the overt name-calling and explicit racial epithets, but are baked into the way we conduct business. So the way that those trustees were talking about honoring history, they seem to forget that places like Germany have figured out how to teach about the Holocaust without having any Adolf Hitler monuments. Germany has put tons of measures in place to recognize the history, to make sure they never repeat it, and to tell the truth about it. Canada has not gotten there with our colonial past.
I see. And how does this situation tie in with the work you're doing for the Hogan's Alley Society, if at all?
You know, Hogan's Alley Society is a newer group, but we have been people who have a collective experience of individual exclusion and isolation. We see our communities continue to suffer here in Vancouver. Our numbers are small, and so we're very interested, and it's part of our mission to work towards alleviating the systemic problems that continue to plague people of African descent here. And we're talking about across the spectrum, the city of Vancouver, parks, school board, you know, all of these layers and levels of government where we have not been considered, our lives have not mattered. Even the Vancouver Police Department, we recently had a meeting with them to discuss how we can work together to support the residents at Nora Hendricks Place, the supportive housing project that we are partnered in with PHS Community Services Society. These are vital issues, and BC and Vancouver has not recognized or even tried to acknowledge the impacts that people of African descent face. So our organization is working towards that, among a number of things, and it's why I'm particularly interested in making sure that through my social media or opportunities to engage, that I'm trying to educate and bring awareness to some of these things that most Canadians do not know.
So coming back to the plaque, one of the questions that was raised by yourself and others was, you know, who made the decision in 2017 to install the plaque of Cecil Rhodes? Was there some debate? Why did it happen? What was the process? Did you find out how this came about?
That is a motion I believe Trustee Reddy has made. We would like to understand that because that's where some of the true systemic work is. The systemic work is you and me and her and him coming together and making a decision, and then that decision having this kind of impact. That's literally what we're talking about. So we want to know how that decision went. We want to know who allocated budget to it. We want to know why a principal of a school declared openly and unabashedly that they were neutral on this monument. That is a person that is in charge of the well-being and education of students from a variety of races and perspectives. What harm is that principal causing if they don't even know that they need to stand in a certain position about white supremacy? This is shocking, and we should all be terribly troubled that that's what a principal said in an article. The fact that the Tai Yi article came out and the Vancouver School Board wasn't immediately on phones to administrators and leadership in the Vancouver School Board to address it, that it required a motion, is a disgrace.
Indeed, and even prior to that, at the Facilities Planning Committee meeting on June 19th, there were some residents who spoke in favor of keeping the plaque in place. How would you characterize the opposition to removing the plaque?
I would characterize that as white supremacy. I would characterize that as people who, whether they know it or not, are actively upholding the systems of dominance that Europeans have had on these lands for the time since they've been here. And there was a gentleman who spoke who openly said, "We were the conquerors. You do not get to rewrite our history." That is specific white supremacy. And the fact that the committee chair, Wong, let a comment like that go without reprimand, as a matter of fact, reprimanded those of us who had a visceral response to that kind of race discrimination and white supremacist kind of language. We were sanctioned for our reaction, but this individual was supported and consoled when they were feeling fragile about our reaction. And you have the chair of a committee of a school board who did not identify and sanction what bordered on hate.
Can you narrate a bit about what happened exactly with that person's remarks about how they were the original conquerors and what response was?
This person had an entire PowerPoint, which is quite impressive given the time we all found out about how long we had to apply or speak at the notice that was given. So this individual had a PowerPoint presentation. They spoke about a family member that went to the school. They showed a photograph, ironically, pointing out their relative, and there's a poor little black child or child of color, at least, that I could see in that photograph. Their well-being, obviously, inconsequential. And they talked about the fact that Cecil Rhodes, this name, is upholding the British Empire. He mentioned about, you know, these are we won the battle, I think was said, and you don't get to pander. He actually told the board chair not to pander. This is explicit.
And what was your response to that?
Go ahead.
Sorry to interrupt you. What was your response to that? And how did the chair handle that? I'm just trying to understand the dynamic.
So, yeah, there was those of us who were in the gallery were stunned, shocked, appalled, hurt, harmed. And we gasped and we said, "This is ridiculous." And we muttered under our breath. Nobody overturned a table. Nobody threw a chair. This is a visceral reaction and a gasp at this type of rhetoric being spoken openly in 2019 in Vancouver. And so we were appalled, and some people said that's racist. And as a matter of fact, as soon as this person heard or felt that they were called racist, they descended into white fragility and said, I'm being called racist. This isn't fair. This is an individual who is primarily concerned about protecting Cecil Rhodes' name on a monument without wanting to be labeled a racist. I mean, the irony and the layers of fragility and gaslighting is just, I mean, it's staggering. And you have a counselor who presided over that.
And then how did, you said Alan Wong, Trustee Alan Wong, he sanctioned you or didn't, what was his role in that?
What I seem to recall was he said, you know, that's enough or something, or he said there will be no comments from the gallery. And then he actually apologized to the blatant white supremacist. He apologized to him and said, I'm sorry for the disruption.
Oh, I see. Okay. Thanks for fleshing that out. Okay, I've got another question for you. You know, on this point, you know, I'm from South Africa and, you know, we learned about Cecil Rhodes in school in South Africa. However, there was, you know, I'm surprised that so many people like that person who came and talked about how the conquerors should not be unconquered or something, how they became aware of Cecil Rhodes. I was just wondering, how would you imagine the opposition would have been different if the plaque was of an even more well-known but still racist figure in settler Canadian history, such as John A. Macdonald or Winston Churchill?
Well, we have some examples, right? Look at what happened in Victoria when the mayor decided to remove the John A. Macdonald monument. People are not happy. There's people who feel like this society is ordered around their existence and privileges and benefits them primarily. And to people who have been very privileged, equity feels like oppression.
I see. And finally, after Reddy's motion passed on Monday, you tweeted that we still have a lot of work to do, and I quote, to center the voices of Black community members in these moments, not administrators or politicians. Can you elaborate on what you meant by that?
I think what happens in these cases is that the story becomes the motion. The story becomes that the council made a decision that was finally good or whatever. The story becomes centered around people that already have quite a lot of a platform and spotlight. And I would argue that the story needs to center around the people most harmed. We actually have to hear from and learn from the people who've been, you know, shouting these things from the rooftop for decades versus this one motion, this one trustee board. It has to be, I think, much more substantial than that. And I think that's what I was trying to say, because the news media won't necessarily call us. You know, you reached out to me, which is fantastic, but you'd find that, you know, they would not always do that. Many do, and we're grateful for that, but many do not. Many focus in on the administration or the political context. And that's how we continue as media to uphold and reinforce the exclusion. Like, that's whose voice should be centered in this moment. When someone is harmed or when someone is the most impacted, that's whose voice should be centered.
All right. Thanks so much, Stephanie, for taking the time to speak with us today.
My pleasure. I appreciate the call.
Yeah. All right. And also, this is now South Africa. I just want to thank you for the work you're doing.